Okay, so here's the thing. I have to like trick Jeff into not talking after I hit the split button on the record.
Okay, so here's the thing. Brian thinks he has to trick me into not talking when he hits the split thing to start the recording. I'm just a jerk.
Oh, right. And on that note, welcome to the Context Machine. This is episode 656. Fortunately, not a palindrome. This is Brian Chaffin.
And this is Jeff Gamet.
The jerk.
All I need is this lamp and this paddle ball. And that's all I need.
Yeah.
Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
Were you aware that we actually have a website? It's at contextmachine.io.
Shut the front door.
I know. It's hot outside. It's not like I'm paying to air condition the outdoors.
Did you know, Jeff, that you can use contextmachine.io to reach out to us?
I had no idea.
It's true. Or you can find us at Mastodon at Context Machine. And you can write us at contextmachinepodcast@gmail.com. Here's the deal. It turns out a few people have done that.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
We actually have a listener email.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, it might go back a little bit because it turned out all those jokes we made about not checking the account were less joke and more real.
The funniest jokes are based in reality.
Right.
We have a sponsor, Brian.
Oh, do we? Who?
We do. LinkedIn Jobs.
Oh, good. I like them.
Yeah, they're nice people.
Yeah, they're good people.
They's good people.
Give us a light, would you, sugar? All right. So
you said people have been contacting us.
Yes, that's what I said. And the first one, we'll talk about them in order.
Okay. Yes, first word sounds like.
I'll take this out. There's a dog barking outside.
Let me guess. It's outside the studio and it's going, Brian.
Causing my dog to bark. So anyway, way back in December, Chris S. wrote to us talking about Apple Card, because we were talking about Apple Card and whether or not Apple was going to end up, if Goldman Sachs was going to basically unload the Apple Card business. And we were talking about how it's profitable or why it isn't profitable for Goldman Sachs. Mm-hmm. That was the nature of that conversation. And Chris S. said at that time, my guess is many Apple Card users don't keep a revolving balance. Basically, if we don't keep a balance that we're paying interest on, the banks don't make money.
Okay.
That could be the issue. I don't know. But he said that he offered himself up as an example, 'cause he said he's had a perfect credit score, 849, which is fantastic, for over 15 years. And he got a $1,000 limit offer from Goldman Sachs with a 25% APR. And he rejected that.
Seems wrong. And just to be clear, not your credit score, but the
fact that credit score could end up resulting in such a low offer. Yeah, that does seem wrong. There could be some missing information. Turns out Chris didn't include his credit report with his email. But that could be the case. And I noticed my credit score when I got my Apple Card was really high, and I also didn't get much of a credit limit offer. It did seem like Goldman Sachs was being awfully cautious, completely anecdotally speaking.
Now, you got your Apple Card early on. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get around to getting one until I was ready to get probably a new Mac or something, new iPad, who knows? Sure. A new Apple thing. And so at the time that I was going to pay for it, it's like, oh yeah, let's do the Apple Card thing and see what I get.
The financing that Apple gives you for its own products through the Apple Card, as well as the 3% back, is great.
Yeah. And my credit rating, I don't know exactly what it was, 7 something. And they gave me, which for the credit rating, to me seemed kind of low, but whatever, it was more than enough. It was like 5,000. Hmm. And I was like, whatever, it's enough, more than enough to cover what I'm buying.
Yep.
And I get my cash back, and my credit limit, I think it's gone up once. So I don't know. I feel almost like there's a randomness to the whole thing, because
it's almost like Goldman Sachs was new to the credit card business.
Yeah.
And they were.
And I was definitely not in that first round of people that got the card. And like, so much so that my card expires, I think, next spring.
Okay. So, mine expires. So we were talking about this in a sort of reunion meeting with old friends, mm-hmm. just this week. You were there and you were there. And
you were there. And
so we're kind of curious if Apple is going to be, or if Goldman Sachs is going to be replacing these expensive titanium cards with new cards, or if they'll just reissue the credentials.
The answer is you will get a new card physically, and there will be a shipping label so that you can take your old card and send it back so that the titanium can be recycled.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Now you know.
You can keep it if you want. As far as I know, you don't have to send it back.
Kind of
want
to hoard it. It'd be nifty if they would give us something for sending it back. It's interesting because, I mean, I'm surprised they don't just reissue the credentials, because the, like a credit card has got, most credit cards have a expiration date on it, but these don't.
No, they don't. Yeah, your name is on it. It says Goldman Sachs and has the Apple logo. That's basically it.
Yep.
I think there's a MasterCard logo on it somewhere too.
Yes. Yeah. So I would love to know what's up.
Yeah.
All right. So next email, right?
Next email. Yes.
We have Colin, who wrote to us just a couple of weeks ago.
See, we are on top of it.
Right. Right. Here we go. He wrote about your pen. So he said he was fascinated to hear of Jeff's search for a walking around pen. So we were talking about why don't you tell us?
All right. So to get everyone caught up, I have a handful of fountain pens, and one of them that I use like daily at my desk, it's the Pilot Vanishing Point. I love this pen. but I don't want to carry it around with me out and about because I don't want to lose it or break it. So I want a pen that I can just throw in my pocket and take with me everywhere. A fountain pen that I can just take with me everywhere. And so that was our discussion. And that's where Colin comes in, because Colin has been a fountain pen user for a really long time. And
he seems a little more serious.
Yeah, well, Colin shows his fountain pen cred when he points out that he has a vanishing point as well, except he's had his so long that he got it when it was still the Pilot retractable. Mm-hmm. They hadn't changed the name to vanishing point yet.
And he also shows his cred by including his excellent signature.
It's way nicer than my signature.
Oh my God. It's a very beautiful signature in his email, which Colin, chef's kiss.
Yes. Well, Colin does use a chisel tip calligraphy nib. And
which I would not be able to do, but go ahead.
Yeah. I do not have a chisel tip pen. So I need to go to Two Hands Papery, which is the awesome pen and paper store in Boulder, and try out some pens with chisel tips just to see how they feel. But he's got a quality.
He ground his broad nib down to a chisel. So like Colin is the real deal. I'm a pretender with fancy old pens. Colin is the real deal, I feel, when it comes to
Colin's the pens. Real deal.
Yeah.
I'm a pretender to the throne. Yeah, I'm the enthusiast who compared to everyone else is still new to all of this, and I'm just having a wonderful time exploring the world of fountain pens.
And I'm a jackanape who has more money than sense.
Brian, but you're our jackanape, and you're so cute.
So anyway, what else did he say?
So he actually carries his retractable, from my perspective, his vanishing point, and I totally get why he would do that.
No, that's not what he carries around. He carries around his Kaweco Sport.
He does now. You need to read the whole email.
I did.
He
does now. So he carries, not he carried. He carried the retractable. He carries the Kaweco Sport.
All right. I accept your apology.
No, sir. Because he said this tiny pen is cheap, writes well, and really is really easy to carry.
Uh huh.
So
and that's the, and the problem sport. The problem he has with it is that no, wait.
Yes, exactly. I accept your apology with the retractable, like, and that was that he couldn't get a calligraphy pen with his retractable.
Right. And now that he's not working all the time, Colin, I'm sorry. We really did read this and we just clearly have a horrible reading comprehension today. So the thing is that now he needs something that he can throw in pants pocket as opposed to his dress clothes pocket. And the sport is great for that. And he can do his calligraphy nibs still.
And he gave us a great link.
He did. Colt Pens. I'll make sure that the link is in the show notes. So coltpens.com. And he did give me fair warning that this is a dangerous website for someone like me to go to. And I had heard of it, but I had never been there. And so I do have the website open now. And this could be trouble for me, and Colin, I blame you in a good way, of course.
Right. And so they're a British company, by the way. So we assume they'll ship to the US, but they do in fact have a broad variety of fun pens.
The Lamy Safari left-hand nib that I bought, I bought from Pen Chalet, which is a UK pen company, and they, like, you go to their site and they ask that they'll let you say what country you're in so that they can make sure that they have the right shipping and everything for you and show you what you're paying in your currency. And I'm assuming Cult Pens is going to be the same.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. And they're doing 15% off orders over 100 pounds, 10% off orders over 50 pounds right now. Birthday code birthday 10 or birthday 15 for, you know, depending on what you're using. So anyway, that's, we appreciate the tip. I should add, by the way, do you remember that those really cool 100-year-old pens, with the rubber bodies, and they've got the gold on them?
Yes, we put a photo of those in the show notes.
Right, and we talked about them the same show that Colin is responding to. And here is what I did. I kept those pens kind of handy because they're super cool to look at. And what I did is I stored them right behind my my water bottle, which is a Yeti, and it's heavy, especially when it's full. And so then I tipped my Yeti over, and where it fell on the pens, and it broke the black one.
Oh, what's
super clever?
Super clever. Chef's kiss, Brian.
I do think it's funny that the rubber body, because so as a reminder, these were that's what they used for, they used cellulose and rubber for pen bodies before plastic.
Back in the day.
Before plastic. So, you know, we would pick this up and assume it was plastic, but it's rubber and it broke. And my pen buddy Nick, my dealer pal.
Your dealer.
Says that there's almost no chance of repairing it. So that's really cool. I'm really pleased that I did this.
That's super awesome. In the other way, where it actually really sucks.
Yeah. So in fact, so it broke, and I was looking at it. It's like, wait a minute, that's not supposed to look like that. I picked it up, and I pulled it apart, and so I got the cap in one hand and the body in the other hand, and the rubber bladder is dangling from the cap. I don't want to pull it any harder. So anyway, but it was just like, oh, good Lord.
That really sucks. So
I am very angry with myself over this.
I can appreciate the frustration you are experiencing.
Thank you.
I have not broken a pen, but I can still appreciate the frustration. That just sucks.
Thanks. All right, so then
think with a rubber body, your water bottle would have just bounced right off.
Right, exactly. That's the sort of comedy. But again, it looks and acts like plastic, but plastic is cheaper than doing this with rubber, is why that stopped.
Mm-hmm.
So Grant, our old friend Grant, longtime listener, not a first time writer. He wrote to us on December 30th, so we're lame. But he said that he wrote to basically let me know that he had bought two copies of my book from Barnes & Noble and had them shipped to Australia.
Wow.
One for
himself. Okay, that's super cool.
It is super cool. Super ridiculously cool. He got one for himself, and he gave one to his local library.
Okay, even cooler.
That is so cool. That is so cool. I so appreciate you, Grant, and I'm sorry that we are just now checking this account.
we have told everyone that we are top men, so we're kind of on brand.
So he also made a comment about streaming services. Grant's emails, he's always got good insight. But he said, I'm going to quote, "I was under the impression that no streaming services ever made a profit." I don't know if that's true. "Most especially Netflix. There is no business model, just last man standing bravado at this stage. And they're all still in this tragic every studio for themselves, loss of blood and treasure phase before they realize there's no money in it. And they'd rather just make it one service and pray that that can make a profit. Yes, they've abolished owning anything, but they can't even make that work." It's a good point.
All right. So I decided, because why should we do any research before the show when we can do it live, to see what Netflix's income has been?
Do any of the people you're on other shows listen to us?
Do you think they would let me on their shows if they did?
I was wondering which direction you were going to take that question. Fair enough. I'm just wondering if they're really, you don't do any research on the Context Machine?
Okay. So related to that on some level, I regularly do Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live. Mm. And that one's just like a whole panel discussion. Mm-hmm. And people will say something, they will ask something. And since that one's done live, the people that are watching the show live, they'll often ask questions and people don't have the answer, or they're just trying
to. But you have the answer.
Yeah, I'm sitting there looking stuff up. And Chuck knows that as everyone is having a discussion where they're going, "Well, I don't know, but I think this, and I don't know, but it's probably this," I've done the search. And then when someone has to stop to take a breath, I'll jump in. And like in this case, I'll say Netflix's annual gross profit from 2023 was just over $14 billion, which was up from 2022.
Gross profit or revenue?
Gross profit.
No way.
12.447 billion for their annual gross profit in 2022. So their gross profit has been going up year over year. In 2021, it was 12.365 billion, which anyhow. So Netflix is making a profit and it is increasing year over year.
Huh. That is the case, apparently. Although, so I'm a little concerned because Google has sprinkled in AI results. Slathered AI results in the top of its search results.
Yeah, well, okay. So that's a genuine concern, and that's like a whole separate show right there. The data that I'm getting, I pulled this from Macro Trends. I'll have a link to this specific thing in the show notes. So it looks like we're on top of it and we're doing our research all the time. But it's interesting looking at their profits from December 2009 up to now.
Yeah, you look at the Macro Trends article.
Yeah, Macro Trends.
Got it.
And so it's this nice little chart, and you can see their numbers.
It's been pretty consistent.
super low, and then in 2017, it just starts going up.
Yeah,
and then it just keeps going up faster and faster. And then there was a little bit of a drop off, but it was still, you know, like 4.9 billion in 2022. So that was a little bit drop off, and then it starts going back up again.
Yeah, I'm seeing 2022 12 billion in profits. So, Grant, I'm sorry, but they have made money.
But yeah, he also notes Netflix and chill is a thing.
He also noted that he said he was pretty sure that no music streaming service has ever made a profit either. I believe that that's the case. I know Spotify has never made a profit, but is insisting they'll make it up on volume. They lose money on every customer. Yeah.
And for Amazon, it's since, yeah. Did they even break that out? I don't know if they do.
I don't think they do. And Apple certainly isn't. Gross net income. No, they say that they've got a net income figure. Yeah. Well,
And I think Tidal has been just rough every year that they've been in existence.
Yeah. Well, that's they're an also ran.
Yeah. Yeah, so much for making a service that prioritizes the musicians.
Yep. All right, yep. So anyway, that's viewer mail. Listener mail. Viewer.
Top men. Audio viewers. They're viewing with their ears, Brian.
Right, so we should have another batch of these in 6 months.
Our semi-annual mail drop.
But seriously, we will be checking this for real from now on.
We are horrible people.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for the emails. Seriously.
Yes.
Even though we have failed at staying on top of them, thank you. All of you, you rock.
Yeah, I mean, really, really appreciate the fact that people tune into us week after week. Well, month after month sometimes. But
I think for a lot of people, it's like an ego boost in a positive way for them, because they can listen to us and just sit there and say, wow, these guys are a train wreck. And
happy to be of service.
They're better in comparison, and you know what? I'm glad we're here for all of you.
Yeah, I'm happy to be of service for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. All right. So on that note, LinkedIn. Good. So here's the deal: if you're hiring, my question is: are you excited about hiring? Are you ever excited about hiring? I'm not. Hiring sucks, but LinkedIn Jobs helps make that a lot easier. They have the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. The biggest thing they do, they've got this dashboard that makes it so much easier to manage your hiring process. The dashboard puts all of your prospective candidates at your fingertips. It puts your job listings at your fingertips. It puts your questions at your fingertips. The dashboard is what makes LinkedIn Jobs so good. But LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals that you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours.
Wow.
Yes. So you can hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. LinkedIn knows that small businesses are wearing so many hats and might not have the time or resources to hire. LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker, which must be why 2.5 million businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. So you can post your job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. That's linkedin.com/ACM to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, thank you, LinkedIn Jobs.
Yes, thank you, LinkedIn Jobs. We appreciate your long-running sponsorship. We appreciate that, and that must mean our listeners use them. So thank you, listeners, too.
Yeah, good on you for finding the perfect employees. with LinkedIn Jobs Help.
Yes. All right. I believe that our next topic is sugar and dark. The topic
where Jeff resents Brian because Brian gave Jeff homework.
Yes. Awful homework.
Awful homework.
Involving
sugar. I had to sit on the couch and watch television.
And dark matter.
Sugar. Both on Apple TV Plus.
Yes, both on Apple TV Plus. I am... I don't know that I'm caught.
I am definitely not caught up, but I'm a couple episodes in on both.
Well, so you're almost caught up on Dark Matter. I think there's three episodes out total.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I believe, so episode 8 just came out this week of Sugar. I haven't watched that.
And I believe that is the final episode of the season.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah. So, all right. So I started watching these because Brian said, hey, you need to watch these. I want to talk with you about them. And like I do, I was like, okay, didn't bother to do any research on what either of the shows is about. So I went in completely blind.
Okay. Which
and without
I did too.
Any preconceived notions.
Except for Apple's trailers.
Well, and I hadn't even watched those.
In fact, I will say that if it weren't for the trailers, I was thinking that Dark Matter was a remake of the sci-fi show of the same name, the sci-fi SYFY network.
Yeah, and
it's not.
I assumed it was part of that same franchise as well.
Right, yeah, which is a natural. I mean, mind you, that show was canceled after 2 seasons, so it's not like there's a lot of mind share for Dark Matter. But this Dark Matter is based on a book by who?
Once again, top men.
Well, I didn't realize I was going to need that.
Well, I mean, that's fair. I do believe that the author of the book was involved in the adaptation for the television series.
That's fun. That's good.
Yeah. It's like when Neil Gaiman. Blake
Crouch.
Yes, I'm pretty sure his name showed up as part of the TV adaptation.
Yeah, I believe it did. So anyway, that is an enjoyable show. I don't know, like, what can we say about it?
I'm liking it, but it's not one that I feel that, you know how some shows you're compelled to just like watch each episode. It's like, oh my, I just have to keep going. I have to binge. I'm not feeling it with Dark Matter, but at the same time, I'm enjoying it.
It's a really good show. I also don't feel I'm not drawn in enough yet to feel that need to watch it. But I absolutely have made sure that I've watched each new episode.
That's it. Thank you for describing what I'm experiencing with this. I haven't been drawn in, and I feel like something's going to happen where I get really drawn in. I had an off-putting moment in the first episode, and keep in mind, I had no idea what I was going to be watching.
Right.
But the show is going along, and then there's this scene, you know, kind of like a mugging, hijacking sort of scene. And very quickly, I realized what the whole show was going to be.
Ah.
And I'm like, seriously, it was that easy for me?
I don't know that that's the case. I don't think the thing revealed by that moment is going to be the thing that we're supposed to figure out.
Oh, no. But, I mean, because it's very clear before that episode even ends what's going on.
Yeah, but I think that's supposed to be the case.
Going with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. It's, I mean,
you're
just
the, you're saying it like, duh.
I shouldn't have been able to figure it out in that scene. It should have been something where it took me longer in the episode to figure it out. But
I disagree. I disagree. Because I don't think that's the thing we have to figure out. I think it's okay for this isn't the plot that you figured out. This is the device.
Yeah. Okay. Fair. This is the device, and I was just disappointed that the way I figured it out didn't involve any more mental work than it did. Like, basically no mental work. And I feel like that scene, the way it's presented, that's not where I'm supposed to figure this out. That's supposed to set up the mystery for me. And then I figure it out a few scenes later. But it was like, it happens, and yeah,
I think that your premise is erroneous. I don't think that's the thing we have to figure out. I don't think that was intended to be the thing that we figure out. I think it was supposed to be obvious.
Oh, okay. Well, then they should have made it more interesting for me. Because, and I've learned this from you, it's all about me.
All right.
So everyone, go watch it right now. Woo!
I'm enjoying it, and I'm looking forward to seeing where the ride the show takes us on.
I'm interested in seeing where it takes us as well. I'm just not hooked in the way that I was thinking I would be.
Okay, fair enough. So let's pivot to Sugar, which is like the exact opposite.
Shirt balls.
That's just a show that just grabs you from the beginning.
Opening scene. Yes, I was hooked from that opening scene, and I am gladly along for the ride. I think that the mystery we get in this one is being presented to us in a way where we actually get to have some mystery to go along with it.
And you ain't seen nothing yet. Because you're two episodes in?
I'm two episodes in.
Yeah. I feel like we will have... So, folks, I hope that this is obvious. We do try very hard to discuss these shows in a way that doesn't include spoilers.
Right. Everyone knows how I feel about spoilers.
Right. And I feel the same way about spoilers. And I also feel like our listeners probably realize that we're, you know, showing them respect in the way we talk about these shows. If we had waited to talk about the show until the season was over, we still could have talked about it without giving anything away. But I feel fairly confident we'd be having a different discussion than we're having now.
Well, maybe we will have that discussion later on.
Yeah, I think we'll probably need to. And hopefully it'll be next week because you'll catch up.
Yes. I'm hoping that I'll be caught up by then. Yeah.
Yeah. So Colin Farrell is terrific in this show.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the they do essentially constant throwbacks to film noir movies.
Yes, and they do it in such a fantastic way.
Yeah,
I'm absolutely loving that.
Yeah, it is terrific. And so what I really wish is that you were caught up and then you and I could actually talk about it with spoilers out, like, boom, doom, 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 thank you, blah, 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 blah. And then we'd like talk about all the things.
We will be able to do that soon.
Okay, good. The cast is terrific. It's got James Cromwell in it. It's got Colin Farrell. It's got Amy Ryan. It has Kirby, I guess is her name. I've seen her. I've seen her. And then it's got Nathan Cordery. It's a fantastic cast. It's fantastically shot. It's got a wonderful palette, color palette.
Everything about this show just feels top notch.
Yeah. And I feel like they could have done it, in kind of a cheesy way where it was the 1950s today, or even the late 40s. And they didn't. You've got Colin Farrell, whose character has all of these, you know, sort of 50s-esque Brat Pack-y kind of sort of qualities, but even he doesn't feel so much like an anachronism as just a, you know, like a style icon walking through the set.
Yeah. It's everyone feels like they fit, and the way that they give us those homages to the noir genre, it's wonderful. And I'm loving the story, and I'm looking forward to unraveling the mystery, and I don't feel like they're ham-fisting anything on me, which is big. That, I mean, that just turns me off.
Same. So speaking of noir, by the way, I was talking to some writer friends of mine, and we were talking about the, so someone was trying to categorize their next book. And so he asked me, like, you know, what did you categorize your book as? And at some point in this conversation, one of them said, yeah, like, it would be nice if tech noir was a category.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, and it's not. Like, book categories. So I don't know how much readers actually pay attention to the categories of their favorite books. I don't really think they do. But the point is that categories tend to lag way behind changes in the industry. And it would be lovely if tech noir was a thing.
That would be cool. But honestly, I think most people, when they, the categories that they're looking at, it's sci-fi, fantasy, romance, Western, history, whatever, things like that. They're not looking at the categories, like what type of sci-fi, what type of fantasy.
Fair enough. Yeah, I've got to not let that lie. When they're searching, I think that their cares about subcategories are expressed through their searches as opposed to their, I'm clicking on this category and I'm going to see what's listed.
Okay.
Because I do think that people like cyberpunk books. I think that people do like tech noir. But they're finding other ways of finding it other than clicking on the sci-fi, cyberpunk, tech noir. Click.
Okay. That seems reasonable. And knowing full well, I'm probably just enabling you on some level. I will say, I bet you're right.
Thanks. Thanks. I accept your endorsement. all right. That feels like the place where I should have done this. That would have been really clever if I made my joke, we both laughed, and then boom, you know. But I'm not that clever.
Top men.
That's this week's Context Machine. If you have anything to comment at or question, you can write us at contextmachinepodcast@gmail.com. We are checking that. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Dr. Boom, recorded just for this show. And that's all for this week, Jeff.
And hey, thank you, LinkedIn Jobs, for being our sponsor.
Yes, thank you, LinkedIn Jobs, for sponsoring us. We appreciate that. Freaking top men.
We'll check the email again in what, 6 months?
Yep.